Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Coming to you from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria, this is your host, Kevin S. Fox. Tonight, we celebrate the end of the show's first season. This is our 12th episode. We investigate tonight the why of the where in a very, very local sense by looking at how it is I am able to be here in Studio B at Radio Fabrique, hosting, producing, or making radio. I speak with Eva Schmidhuber, my primary contact here at the station, about the history and humble beginnings of what is now a Salzburg institution. Our talk meanders along a colorful genealogy, but comes back to the idea of empowerment, or what I've been calling in the last few years, poetic development. Studio B has both physical and conceptual architecture that we the radio makers co-produce and keep alive through our making. So I'm here in Studio B, sitting with Eva Schmidhuber, the program coordinator for Radio Fabrique, the show's home station. So thanks for joining me on this rainy afternoon in Salzburg.
Happy to be here. Thanks to you.
Can you tell us a little bit about the history of radio, I guess, in general in Austria? Because Radio Fabrique is somewhat new and it isn't that many years old. How did Radio Fabrique, this community radio station, sort of come into being?
That's quite a long story. I mean, we are only 17 years old now, in 2015. So we came into existence in 1998. Not only us as Radio Fabrique, but also some of the first other community radio stations in Austria. And this is relatively late for community radios in Germany or other European countries. They have been existing a lot longer. And the main reason for that is that in Austria we had a very long time of state monopoly in radio and TV, so electronic media. And, well, the first roots of Radio Fabrique are going back to 1992, mm-hmm. When there were some students at the university who had a so-called pirate radio station.
So it does have sort of, I was going to ask,
yes,
that.
It has pirate history, roots, yes. And we are very proud of them.
Yes.
And we always tell these stories because This was really illegal and it was really prosecuted by police. So they had a device for doing the shows and they drove around on the mountains around Salzburg, always on different places, not to get caught. And then there were some, one time they were even localized and then followed by a helicopter by police.
So police helicopters were tracking down the pirate radio.
That is, and that was in 1992. And then there was a fight, a struggle in Austria to bring down the state monopoly, not mm-hmm. only from the community radio stations, but also from private commercial stations who wanted to go on air and gain money with their doing so. And then the private commercial ones and already connected at that time with some of the pirate initiatives went to the European Court of Human Rights.
Huh.
And then there was a decision in 1993 at the court that this state monopoly has to be finished.
Because, and it's connected to this pirate radio sort of
Yes, and
incidents.
Also that this monopoly on, yeah. on media does not is not.
It's not allowing alternative voices, different. Yeah,
yes.
And so was it? Is it both sort of a freedom of?
Freedom of opinion,
of speech and freedom of media, kind of, yeah.
Yes, it, I don't know the exact reasons behind the decision, but they obliged Austria to get rid of this monopoly.
Hmm.
But this then still lasted, I think, 2 years. I think in 1995, the first licenses were given out to private stations.
Yeah.
And also the community radio initiatives applied for licenses.
Uh-huh.
But at the beginning, they did not obtain any of them. I think Radio Helsinki in Graz was the first who got a license. And then we also in Salzburg, we also applied.
Uh-huh.
And then we were successful only in 1998 to get a license. But we did only get... So the license was given to a commercial station,
yeah,
and they were obliged to give a 5-hour slot per week to us as a community radio.
So you didn't get your full on
no,
frequency. No, you had to share it with a commercial station that already existed.
That's it.
So this was what in the state's view or their eyes, it was to test to see if it worked. Or
well, I think they didn't expect these community radios to be able to exist. They just didn't trust them, or I don't know what the reasons were. I'm not...
So just being
but they
slow
preferred
to change.
They gave a lot of licenses then in these first years to private commercial stations.
Hmm.
But many of them failed because the market for publicity, for advertising in radio on a local, regional level is not that big in Austria.
So opening up then to not just having the state-run stations... allowed a couple of things, the privately run for-profit stations,
yes.
And then the non-for-profit community
yes.
stations that
but
don't use any advertising.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But these non-for-profit radios, the community radios as we are,
yeah.
They were never acknowledged. It was never a special category.
Oh, right.
It was only state,
state
so
and
public radio
yeah.
and TV and private. But in the private sector, there is still no difference in law between the commercial ones and the non-commercial ones.
Hmm.
We're still working on that to get this differentiation really into the law.
Because then that would probably affect what the way you're taxed,
a lot of
maybe
things,
the
yes.
way, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So a number of different benefits you might get by being recognized, having your own category.
That's the
yeah.
point. Yes, but. Well, we still were back in 98 when we got our 5-hour slot.
Yeah.
Which was a very small start, but which this is a fact that was also quite good for us because we could start with a lower level
right.
and fill these 5 hours per week. And only in 2002, we again applied for our own license.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we didn't get it. But it again, another commercial radio got this new license, which was already our frequency, 107.5. So this private radio was called City Radio.
That was here in Salzburg as well.
In Salzburg,
so
yes.
it was a competition for one available
yes.
Frequency.
That's almost always the case.
Oh, okay.
There is one frequency, and then
they call for applications, and they choose who they think is going to be the best.
That's
or
it.
Whatever their criteria is.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then we found an agreement. Our former manager, Wolfgang Hirner, who also founded Radiofabrik,
yeah.
and is still in our board of
directors. Yeah.
He threatened them to go to court and try to get the license for us as a community radio, and they were a little afraid of some maybe losing it, or at least they couldn't get on air immediately if we did that.
Yeah.
And so we agreed with this commercial station to share the frequency, so they gave us the times of which they thought they are not good for advertising. So we had the whole night. And we had, I think it was the hour zero in the afternoon or so when people are working and don't listen. So not the morning because this is very strong, and not the early evening where a lot of people they thought would listen to their advertising.
Right.
And the rest of the time we got. So this was kind of a 50-50 then that we had for the next 2 years.
So you kind of have like the structure of the radio station, but then you're...
Yes.
There's also the schedule of the day that really...
Yes.
It depends. Yeah. Yes. There's some time frames or time slots that are better than others. Yeah.
However, they failed. So the commercial part, the city radio, after 2 years, failed because they had financial problems. They couldn't live off what they gained from advertising.
Yeah.
And so from October 2003 onwards, we had our full license alone, the full 24 hours, 7 days a week.
And you were able to keep it because you reapplied or because you... were able to just take the license from the city radio?
No, we were able to take it.
That's, and then grow the Radio Fabrique project essentially to being 24 hours a day, even right then?
Because they just didn't want it anymore.
Yeah, they walked away essentially.
Yes.
And then you were able to get the full 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Geographical Imaginations is an hour-long radio essay program broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. This public geography project presents a geographical or spatial way of thinking about our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. Each episode takes a theme, or perhaps a question, and explores it through an interactive dialogue with different texts and voices. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode. Where were you then? Like what? Because we're in this great building, and we'll talk about the building itself in a couple of minutes, because this is a newer building, and I feel it as like the hub of, you know, one of the cultural hubs of Salzburg. But where were you in that first transition after City Radio walked away and went downstream?
Well, at the very beginning, when we only had the five-hour slot, we used the studio of that other commercial radio.
You did use
but
their
then
studio,
when we had half of the frequency, so the second period, we already had our own studios. And this is a little connected also to the history of this house, which is called the Agrikultur Building.
Mm-hmm.
Agrikultur is an initiative where a lot of groups are having their station, their housing, so to say.
Yeah.
And it was founded in the 70s.
So it's that old, yeah.
Yeah, it's that old.
The institution.
Idea, it has also a history of, if you take a house that's empty...
Squatting.
Squatting. Yeah. It has a history of squatting. That's what's the word.
Or occupying, we would say today.
Yes. That was the very beginning of the whole AGE idea. But then in 2002, when we moved into this community, so to say, they already had a house legally.
Mm-hmm.
But that was too small already at that time. So when we came there, there was not enough place for us, but they wanted to have us in the house because it's a good idea to have a community radio integrated.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we had then was a container outside this then so-called Kulturgelände Nontal. And in this container, we had the studio and a little office before.
So you were talking about the same kind of container that would be on a barge traveling across the ocean from
Yes, that's the structure,
to,
but it
yeah.
had windows and it had a door and
okay.
it also had a heating. So.
Oh, so it was nice.
Yes,
yeah, all right.
It was a little nicer than the, the original ones.
Yeah.
And that was our home for 3 years then, because only in 2005 this new building was built here from the city of Salzburg for the Kulturgelände Nontal.
So, the city funded the...
Yes, this building then was made by the city of Salzburg. Also, as an it was kind of an acknowledgement of this cultural initiative that was living for such a long time. And so this is still owned by the city of Salzburg. Hmm. And the Arche Kultur itself is the main tenant.
Yeah.
And the other initiatives, as we as Radiofabrik as well, are so to say sub-tenants.
Right.
and have our structures here, which are a lot more luxurious than before. We have a lot more space. We have, well, we grew as well. We are bigger with more people, more people in the office also, and we have two studios now and a lounge and a workshop room, so it's really...
Right, so a lot of growth and having the space to grow,
yes.
I think, here too. I mean, it almost feels like it's like an official co-working space, like very... Or one that's existed for a long period of time, and people and the organizations have really become institutions in Salzburg.
Yes, that's true. That's also a bit... That has two sides as well, because there is a lot of people who also say, well, this is not what it was once. It's too professional. It's part of the establishment and things like that. But that happens everywhere, I think.
It does. And it cycles. And it reminds me, I don't know, there's an example in Madrid in the last few years. There's been a space called the Tabacalera. I don't know if you've been there, but I think a very similar thing happening there. It started out with very grassroots workshops and such. And now... I think the city really has an interest in it and is funding things. So those initial people will probably say, yeah, it's not like the way it used to be. Or even the Radio Fabrique people might say, like, it's not like the container days, right?
Yes, it is different.
Those were the days in the container.
Yes, that's always the idealizing of the old times. And
it's romantic, this romantic nostalgia of how it was.
Yes, and of course it has changed. I mean, we are a lot bigger now than we had been then. So we have around 300 radio makers at the moment. And then
so 300, so the radio maker, and I've commented on this before, I love the name that is put on a person who basically is a host / producer of a show is called a radio maker here. And there's 300 radio makers. So what does that mean to you? Why radio maker? Like, why did you use that term? Because to me, it sounds very poetic, actually.
Well, that's what they do.
Yeah, making
I mean,
radio. Yeah.
I also started as a radio maker here.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, if you start a show on a community radio, you're responsible for everything on your own. You're doing the content, you're doing the technique. So it's there's nobody here with you to help you or assist you in anything.
Right.
So you make the whole radio. And maybe the other part is also that our radio is also owned by the radio makers. So they are not only radio makers, but also radio owners.
Yeah, because so the collective kind of...
Yes.
Yeah.
So everyone
governance.
Who does a show here becomes a member of our...
The governing body. Or
community,
the,
a governing body, and elects the board of directors and the Programmkommission and all this. So
right.
It's very... grassroots democratic also.
Yeah, so 300 now. Say, like, the container days, how many radio makers were there?
Well, that's hard to say for me.
25 or something? Or?
Something like that.
Okay,
yes.
So this is just...
And it grew in these years as well. But as soon as... The good thing about our sharing the frequencies was that we could grow slowly, because it's very hard to start from zero to a full frequency. So it was also a bit of luck for us not to get the license at the beginning, because we could grow in a mode that was good for us to...
Right. People kind of use the word incubation for that, like the little chicken eggs are being incubated, that small businesses and sometimes, or projects in general, need a chance to incubate and kind of find their own direction or even like a show, find your own voice in some ways of what you're going to do And you need a place where you can do that. And I think that's the beauty of this project here. And I shouldn't even call it a project because it's really a very active organization now, Radio Fabrique, of, you're saying, 300 radio makers. And it really gives these people, I think, a chance to not, for some, maybe discover their sort of creative voice, but also, I think, develop that. And one of the things I like to call it is poetic development. And there's these spaces in our communities where that, I think, happens more than it does in other places. And something like this, where you're putting together your own radio show, whether that's selecting a group of 10 songs that you're going to play over an hour, that's very creative, that process, and thinking about how those would match together. Or if you're putting together sort of more of a documentary program, like maybe this one might be considered, there's just all these decisions that you make and all the sort of ideas that you pursue and or don't pursue. These are all kind of ways of developing your own voice and developing your own, I don't know, interests even to some degree. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. To find out more about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. To give some feedback or suggestion for a future episode, go to the comments section on the website, or go to the blog and enter into the conversation. I mean, do you think of it as like this empowering kind of? Do you use that word?
Oh yes, we do.
Yeah,
we
do. What is the word in German, by the way? For
There is no word in German. We use empowerment.
Oh, so you use the yes. English word? Yeah. Well, that's
and participation. That's the two keywords of what we do, to give people participation.
Yeah.
In media, in politics, in any kind of social involvement.
Right.
And to empower them, and this. I mean, you described it very nicely before, I think. That's what we want to do. That's what we also do in many cases. I mean, it's the people who are coming here have very different interests and ideas about what they want to do.
Right.
And there is a lot of young men coming who want to present their music collection. So these people are coming, so to say, automatically.
Yeah.
But as our interest is to kind of bring on air the whole variety of people who are living in Salzburg, we are also setting a lot of initiatives to get people into the radio who are not coming automatically, who are not aware of this possibility or of the chances this might have. So
right.
We are doing a lot of projects and initiatives to get people into the radio that we find are lacking in our program. So, and
I just came across the flyer, I guess you could call it, for trying to bring in people who speak Arabic.
And, yes, that's,
and having that's your biggest initiative lately.
That's the
maybe.
Newest, and yeah. At the moment, most actual initiative, because we have a lot of refugees at the moment here who are coming mainly from Syria.
Yeah.
And we want to have these people on our radio, because everybody talks about them now in all the media that we have here.
Sure, sure.
But hardly anywhere they can speak about themselves with their own voice, and that's what we want to offer to them. But they are normally, certainly mostly not speaking German, and only rarely English. So we had English workshops for them as well, but right. A lot of them only speak Arabic.
Hmm.
And as luckily we have a European volunteer at the moment who is coming from Egypt,
right.
We are able to offer workshops in Arabic to get these people into the radio and give them their own radio show. We have one already in Somali language.
Oh, nice, nice.
And they did the workshop in English. We don't have a Somali one yet.
Well, they'll have to develop the workshop then, the ones doing the
yes.
show. How many, off the top of your head, how many languages are could be heard during the course of, because the scheduling is kind of on a monthly basis, so during the course of the month, how many languages would you estimate could be heard?
That changes a lot. I mean, we have a kind of a fluctuation in our radio shows as well.
Yeah.
At the moment, we are not, I think it's about around 10 at the moment, but we already had up to 16 different languages.
So I'm just going to guess, like, obviously German. Are you
English is always
Spanish.
Spanish, Italian, French, so the classic
Portuguese,
European ones.
Portuguese,
but we also
maybe?
Had Dari, Kurdish, Turkish, Farsi. We still have a very, very active radio makers, even two shows in Farsi.
Huh.
And then we also had Urdu ones and Thai. Well, what else comes to my mind? Hungarian we had.
Have you ever had anyone speak Guarani?
I don't even
from
know.
From Paraguay?
No, I don't think so.
No.
No.
We'll have to get somebody.
We had Portuguese, so at least something from Latin America as well. But
right.
No, I don't think so.
So linguistic diversity, people from different places around the world. It's not just open to sort of the German, obviously the German speaking, or even just someone who considers themselves really local to Salzburg. So you're opening doors to essentially new migrants or refugees even, right? Whose status, legal status is still sort of up in the air. What other sort of diversity can we do? How about gender? 50-50? The
no,
radio
still,
makers?
Still not.
Nah? More
getting,
guys? More men?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has in the history always been more men.
Yeah.
But we are permanently working on that. And I think now we are, it's
2-1?
2/3 men, 1/3 women, I think. I don't have the
so
exact.
So for every two
but,
men,
but
one
we are,
woman. Yeah.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
But we are still not at 50-50.
It's a historically sort of more male-dominated
yes.
profession,
yes.
speaking on the radio.
Well, yes, and I don't know what the reasons are. I mean, maybe men are always the ones who are louder in talking and I don't know. I mean, that we could...
But there's this perception of what a good radio voice is.
Yes.
And I, you know, I've heard people use that expression before. And maybe that has something to do with that. There's this idea, which is not necessarily grounded in anything empirical, let's say, but it's that there's a good radio voice. And maybe some people expect to hear men. I don't know.
Maybe, but I don't think it's the voice. I think it's the idea of I have something to say that people want to hear. Maybe this convention is stronger among men than among women, which is also kind of a prejudice. But however,
right.
We have the experience that we have to look for women to come and make their own show and make them do it.
Yeah, do you is that a maybe a recruitment, just like I saw the recruitment flyer for Arabic, is there an idea or have there been ideas in the past for really trying to recruit more women? Targeting,
yes.
so to speak, women.
Yes, or, I mean,
yeah.
for example, especially in the field of other languages, migrant programs.
Yeah.
There the difference was even bigger than in the general. So the migrants that made radio shows were almost 90% or more men.
Yeah.
So we had a very good and very long-lasting project that was called Welcome to Salzburg, Willkommen in Salzburg, where we searched and found a group of migrant women who had been living in Salzburg for some time.
Right.
From diverse countries in diverse languages. And for 5 years, these women, between 10 and 15, there was a bit of fluctuation also there, did a regular weekly show in 6-7 languages. I think 7 was the maximum, which was kind of an information show from migrant women for migrant women who are maybe not that long in the city. And this was really a project that was very, very important for me, and that was that I liked a lot, because this was where this empowerment thought was really working out in a way that made me feel that this work is really making sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because these women often they were not really into the networks here. They had a lot of negative experience with bureaucracy, with people right. in the offices of the city or whatever, and they told me very often that this experience changed totally, because when they had their microphone and went there and asked as a journalist, even they still were migrant, they still were women, but they were totally different. The reception was totally different then, because they had this microphone in their hand, and they were working for a radio, and they got into networks and got informations that they didn't have simply before, and also that the contact among them in this group was something that helped a lot. It was
right. I think it was really great. It's amazing what the microphone for one, but also just the network that grows as they develop stories and go out and ask people different things and the different people they meet. The microphone does create a different sort of power differential, I think, and maybe balances things out, with the normal power differential being them being spoken down to, perhaps, or I don't know.
Yes.
There's no even sort of playing field. I think that's these are great examples of what this access can do and what that empowerment is. It also, I think, I would suggest too, it allows that person to become part of Salzburg, and maybe that's what you're sort of alluding to. And it's a sense of belonging too, that as a person, we've all gone to new places, right, and tried to live there. When I guess your circumstances are perhaps more permanent, that you're not just there because you're on a contract, and I speak for myself in that case, but when you are moving somewhere because you're literally leaving somewhere behind because you can't go back, you've tried to find ways to belong to that place. And when those barriers are sort of, whether they're real or not, those barriers really sort of limit the way we feel like we belong. And that's kind of a hard thing when you're new to a place, is because you want to feel like you know the place. I think maybe doing a radio show, actually, everyone should do a radio show, the new place they go, and do a couple episodes, I think. You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, Brief Expeditions into the Geographies of Everything and Nothing. For more information about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode. I guess in our last little part here, what are the requirements? So if someone's listening tonight who is in Salzburg or is going to move here or is just curious and maybe wants to set up a community radio wherever they are, what are the requirements? Because really, we talk about the barriers to belonging. The barriers to belonging to Radio Fabrique are pretty low. I mean,
we try to keep them as low as possible.
Yeah.
Because...
And I wouldn't call them barriers. They're just basic. It's the basic training, the basic workshop, really.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. In the end, it's the membership.
Yeah.
And this basic training, this workshop, which is one and a half days, where you learn everything about media law, about how you could organize and style, so to say, your radio show, and also how the studio works, the whole technical part, and how to do recordings and interviews. So, and after these 1.5 days, you are capable of doing your own live show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you... sign a little contract, the so-called Sendungsvereinbarung, where we fix a fixed date. So the frequency is minimum once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Your show should go on air. So we have to find a place in the program where you have time to do the show and where it suits a little bit. And then we do this little contract, and then from that moment on you can go on air. And I mean, there is a little restriction of what is possible, because we have so-called six don'ts on our radio.
Mm-hmm.
Normally you can say and do whatever you want to on air, except for the things that are regulated in media law,
right?
Which count for everybody. But then we have these six don'ts that are specific for community radios in Austria. I think they're more or less the same in all the 14 radios of this kind that we have in Austria.
Yeah.
And this is that the content should not be racist, sexist, anti-democratic, or propagating violence. And then we don't allow commercial advertising,
right,
because we are non-commercial,
right,
and no religious propaganda. This is the only thing, these are the things that are not allowed, but for the rest you're totally free in what you're doing. And that's the only thing you have to take care of. And then we also have, which is quite a new thing, so-called feedback workshops, where we
right.
invite people
right.
after their first 2, 3, 4 shows to come to this so-called feedback workshop, where we just go with them through the shows, through the first shows, and speak about where are maybe technical problems that still are to be solved, or what they could make better in being better understandable, or whatever, things like that.
Right, right. So I do, I guess, part of tonight's episode is celebrating the end of the first year. I think, and I was trying to find the date earlier, but more or less a year ago today, we actually sat down. I walked into the office. We talked about a potential concept for a show, and you immediately said, "Well, let me see what date and time you can do it on." Or, you know, because this show is the fourth Saturday of every month at 7 after the BBC News at 7:06 p.m. And I just immediately thought, wow, this was fast. Like, I still had to do the workshop, of course, but the workshop was set up, and you made some, you know, you were able to make an English speaking workshop for me and a couple of other potential radio makers. But the how fast that happened, I remember thinking, okay, this isn't just an idea anymore in my head. I had to really put in work. I probably put in, and just so people know, I don't think I've really said this on air, but I probably put in 20 hours per episode.
That's far above the
average.
Average, yes.
But maybe less. Maybe it's coming down as I go, but I'm talking about everything from emails.
I can imagine very well that it takes a lot of time, because this is a very professionally made thing, but there's a lot of variety also in this.
Yeah.
Some people just sit into the studio and are not really prepared maybe for the show and play some music. So
yeah.
There's a big variety on how much time people want to use for the
right.
radio show.
And I don't mean to say that to discourage people. I'm just saying you could just show up with your CDs on the night and do it right live from the studio. I'd pre-produce everything. I don't do actually any live production, but we did, yeah. So we did meet that a year ago, and this is marks like the year of doing this. So this is the 12th episode, and I want to, I guess I just wanted to thank you again for, I know it's sort of the philosophy of Radio Fabrique to sort of open its doors to any or most concepts, but this has been a great first year, and I'm looking forward to continuing working here, and mostly in Studio B. It's my favorite hangout on Wednesdays. Most Wednesdays you could find me here. But to thank Radio Fabrique again, and looking forward to continued sort of collaboration down the road.
Yeah, we thank you for this very, very good and great show that I like personally a lot.
Thank you, Eva.
Thanks to you.
All right.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode.
Studio B has become both this physical and conceptual space for this show, a place to put together ideas in this sort of essay format. It's funny, though, to think 1 year ago today I proposed the idea and that I even celebrate what 1 year is in such an arbitrary measure of what really I think is much more, like I mentioned in episode one, much more an exploration that perhaps doesn't have a calendar, that doesn't have a deadline, although each month we do put together an episode on a deadline and for good reason, and that's a good way, I think, to keep on the task. But in the end, it's not necessarily the measure of where we've gone with the show. We've done a number of episodes at this point. We've talked with Doreen Massey, Veronica Della Dora, a number of different geographers, Christopher Gaffney, Jesse Gilley, Joseph Pallas. We've explored the idea of time spaces captured by photography, old landscape paintings, and how they shape our view, or shaped our view perhaps more so in the past, of that place far away. We've talked about the structures that sort of, perhaps dominate the ways we think about the world, the ways we think about space and place. We've talked about alternative mapping. We've talked about sport and bobsled specifically, the sound of music and why that sort of encourages people to come here to Salzburg. And what is that about? What is the trip to Salzburg to see movie sites? Or what is that about for any film in general? What does that mean for us to actually see where a moving film, something that moved us, where that was filmed? We looked at the unwanted heritage of generally sort of World War II era or post-World War II era statues, not to mention also the Ku Klux Klan memorialization at the University of North Carolina. We looked and spoke with two world travelers about their experiences by foot and by bicycle, months or years away from home and exploring the world. And what does that bring to the geographical imagination, that physical being all around and actually going through these landscapes in alternative ways, alternative in the sense not through car or plane. We've introduced this new idea, not to the world of ideas, but just new to the show, that I hope we continue this year, which is about rhythm analysis, based on a book by Henri Lefebvre, not the only one speaking about rhythm, but certainly our approach here, I think, is connected to his ideas of sort of everyday, the everyday life. We've looked at historical geographies here in Salzburg as well by uncovering the history of the Alm Canal, a medieval era canal that runs through Salzburg. And we've looked at sacred mountains, and that was our last episode before this one, that gave us a chance to, I think, explore this idea of different ways of knowing. And that's one of the major themes of the show up until now, and will continue to be. And that, in fact, is, I think, what the geographical imagination is for us to consider how we think about the world at that level in terms of how is it that we know the world, and asking those questions of what many might call epistemology. But it also depends on sort of, or it's connected to theories of knowledge. And so how we collect information and store it in some ways, and how that gets archived and then becomes, in some ways, the way we frame the world and the way our eyes capture the world, and our mind does too. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Tonight's been our year-end episode, the end of season one, where we've really started to shape and form, I think, the trajectory of this show. And I'm talking to you now with the song behind, I wanted to thank Mike Allen being part of that trajectory. His song, Driffield Beats, has accompanied just about every episode, and we use it for our show ID. It just has a nice sort of, I think, rhythm to it, let's call that. But thanks to Mike Allen, we use his song under Creative Commons, so if you're looking for music for any of your projects, go ahead to jamendo.com, and that's where we found Mike Allen's music. So, without anything else, let's get back to our discussion and then finish up episode 12. So here we are then, moving forward into season 2 with ideas for a continuation of the format and adding to it, I think, a number of different themes. Like I mentioned earlier, I really want to continue to explore this idea of a place having rhythm. And this, I think, forces us to accept this idea that we have to approach then a place through a different lens. And so taking on the lens of rhythm, if that is in fact how we want to understand rhythm, or is it something much more felt through the body, whether that's the physical body or sort of our conceptual body. It's this idea of does a city have a rhythm, and how do we get to understand or be in that rhythm? What does that rhythm tell us about a place? And I think a lot of us would casually sort of say, yeah, I mean, this city has a certain vibe or a certain, maybe we don't use the word rhythm, but it has a certain feel to it. And what is that? Is it the spirit of place? Is it the way everything kind of comes together, and how everything comes together? Is it different? And are we talking about cultural differences? Are we talking about the way the economy works? Are we talking about, anything from, is it more a bike-friendly city and how that shapes then the arteries, the physical ones that go through a city and how people traverse them? There's a wide range of, I think, examples that we can explore that really help us not pin down, but just explore what we mean by rhythm of a city and what doing an analysis of those rhythms might mean. And again, referring back to Henri Lefebvre, but we'll expand sort of our notion of what that means. There's a couple other projects that I've been working on in the past that I think might come together. One regarding the voyage of St. Brendan and how that story sort of circulated through medieval Europe. And being here sort of in a medieval city, Salzburg, that story perhaps arrived here as well. And so I want to look at how that might have shaped, certainly shaped people's worldviews because of its suggestion that the Atlantic, there was something out there, right? And so in this pre-Columbian mind, maybe not that we're going to get into that, but we can certainly just take a look at the extent to which that story, that narrative of the voyage of St. Brendan, an Irish sailor monk, made it this far east into what we call today Austria, right? I'm also putting together a special episode on pedagogy, and so teaching practices, and how we, and I myself am a geography teacher, how we, through our teaching practices, actually could then foster and develop this geographical imagination and challenge it. And through certain exercises, through certain projects, through certain ways to challenge our students, challenge ourselves, to piece together the world in different ways. I'm also doing an episode that will look at walking again, and walking is a common theme throughout the show. I think it's a great way not only to maybe go and interview someone on a walk, but also it's a different way of engagement with a city. And so on foot, we know it in a different way. Again, very much tying into this, another overarching theme that's developing here with the rhythm. And I think walking provides a different window into the rhythm of a city. These are all in the works, and they, like I mentioned, take some time to put together. It's just a matter of being able to meet the right people and having an idea and kind of piecing it together with notes I have from the past or notes that are, you know, a notebook that slowly is building and kind of piecing it together in the end to really sort of present something that on its own, I think each episode on its own, does stand and also gives us an idea about what this overarching theme of the geographical imagination is all about. I'd like to thank all those who have participated in the show, in the production of the show, from all the different episodes and people behind the scenes with photography, and of course, Eva Schmidhuber, who you heard earlier, and all the people really at Radio Fabrique. Eva is sort of my main contact, but definitely speak with a number of different people here who, without their help, this sort of, you know, and not having Studio B, as I've been calling it, and Studio B is not just this physical space here, it's actually having the support network of the radio station that's really made this project possible. So thank you all, and que les vaya bien. Ciao.